Thank you for joining us today, and welcome to the second episode of HMA's podcast series, On the Horizon. I'm your host, Jason Silva. Today, we're going to be talking about work requirements for Medicaid. This topic has sparked a lot of interest since CMS recently provided guidance on work requirements and approved Kentucky's 1115 waiver. Now, the approval of Kentucky's waiver marks the first approval of work requirements for Medicaid. And beyond Kentucky, 9 other states are currently seeking approval for similar requests. Additionally, more states, for example, South Dakota, Louisiana, Alabama, and others, are reportedly considering work requirements as well. At this time, however, it's difficult to know if the path for Medicaid work requirements is actually clear. While CMS has issued guidance and Kentucky's waiver has been approved, a court challenge appears to be imminent as advocacy groups are concerned that work requirements are not likely to promote Medicaid's objectives and that this type of change to the Medicaid program requires congressional action. So with the road ahead for work requirements still developing, HMA continues to examine potential changes and possible impacts before they take shape. For our discussion today, we're joined by Steve Fenton. Steve is a principal in HMA's Lansing office with more than 40 years of healthcare policy experience. He's a former Medicaid director and is recognized nationally as a Medicaid expert. Thank you for joining us today, Steve.
Happy to be here.
Great. So just to kick things off, could you just talk a bit about how work requirements, if permitted by the courts, of course, could alter the Medicaid program we have known for more than 50 years?
Well, it's probably a variation on a theme to some degree, but, well, let's start with this. In some ways, it's fundamentally a question about what is the mission of the Medicaid program, and even though there have been some moves in the direction of personal responsibility over the years, including here in Michigan where I worked, the mission of the program has historically been to provide health coverage for individuals who can't afford it. And actually, until the Affordable Care Act, it was limited to being categorically eligible, so that meant it was limited to people who were disabled or aged or children or parents and caregiver, caretaker relatives, other individuals that were raising minor children in their household, and it excluded adults who didn't have any minor children in the household and weren't disabled. And then with the Affordable Care Act, the intention there was to create a structure where every American would qualify for health coverage, or close to every American. There were still some limitations. So this actually, I think, introduces into the Medicaid program, or maybe is another step in the direction of bringing Medicaid into the whole world of social determinants and other elements in the in a family equation that have to do with their ability to participate fully in society, to be successful. And I think the notion of those, at least some folks, and particularly those who are supportive of this effort, the idea is that you get on Medicaid, and if you're, you know, not disabled and reasonably healthy, that this can help you get healthier. Maybe you have some health impediments to work, and that Medicaid, in a lot of ways, is the Medicaid coverage is then intended to enable you to get into the workforce and to become independent. But that's a shift, really, from Medicaid being primarily about providing health coverage for individuals.
Okay. No, that's a great insight, Steve. Now, I'm wondering, as a former Medicaid director, how do you see states administering this new requirement, specifically the tracking and evaluating of individuals no longer enrolled in Medicaid as a result of work requirements, and of course, maintaining budget neutrality?
Well, if I was running a Medicaid program, I certainly would be concerned about increasing the complexity of what is already a pretty complicated program. And when you think of the administrative resources and apparatus that you need operationally to now include this as a requirement, I think it's pretty daunting. At least that would be my view. I think one of the just to start with, Medicaid is complicated. Even if you just get look at something as basic as income eligibility. So you're looking at an individual. Historically, the income eligibility is different for individuals at in different categories. So a child might be Medicaid eligible up to 150% of poverty, but a non-disabled adult with minor children in the household might only be eligible up to 50% of poverty. So the Affordable Care Act actually narrowed some of that, but when it went to and income eligibility, again, can be fairly complicated. Even with the Affordable Care Act, which simplified eligibility determination by linking it to modified adjusted gross income and eliminating the asset test, still you have a great deal of difficulty with people who are in occupations where their number of hours varies by week, so their income can go up and down, and actually in some cases it can push them above Medicaid eligibility one week and below in the next week. And so you have to make some decisions in terms of how your administration is going to handle those variations and whether you're going to how you can maybe smooth that income over time so that you aren't just pushing people off and on a monthly basis. I think the point is to look at their income and try to project it on an annual basis, but that's fairly tricky. And now you introduce an element where individuals have a responsibility to seek employment or participate in these community engagement requirements, and you have to try to figure out how to link that up with populations that are already subject to those kinds of requirements, who maybe are in the TANF program where they get income support, or some states have a work requirement for food stamps for the SNAP program. And so you want to make sure that you aren't tripping over yourself and duplicating efforts, that there would be some consistency across these different programs. And in a sense, Medicaid is really entering a space it hasn't been in the past. And so trying to figure out how to do that, how to target it, how to make sure that you don't catch up populations that really aren't able to work. And so it was interesting that the federal guidance that came out in the state Medicaid director letter had various provisions for exempting individuals who were frail, maybe individuals who had caretaker responsibilities in their household, and then consideration of what the economic situation would be in a particular geographic area, so that maybe the unemployment rate is quite high in an area. I think there's just all kinds of complexities to sort through. So the administrative burden, I think, is really significant, and it introduces some value judgments, and maybe these would get worked out. And again, I'm not involved directly in the administration of this, but as I think about it, maybe you have a professional who's having difficulty getting a job in their field, but they're clearly employable. Do you force them to take a lower income job while they look for work that is more in line with their education and credentials? Or if you're in a high unemployment area, would you even consider pushing people to relocate and move away from their community and extended family because there just aren't jobs there? And I didn't see that, but you start to think about those kinds of factors in terms of how you're going to design the rules of the game for individuals. So I think it's a challenge, to be sure.
Absolutely. No, that's really interesting around the underemployment perspective. I think that's something that will probably be looked at in short order if, the work requirements are allowed to proceed. I just really think that, you know, it is. It's daunting is the word as far as these work requirements and administering them going forward. Now, given the state's responsibility, do you maybe see some of the activities associated with work requirements being offloaded to the Medicaid managed care organizations, or maybe MCOs being asked to provide additional data in light of the new requirements?
Well, I think that's certainly possible. A lot of that would depend on the structure of the Medicaid program in a particular state. But one of the elements you'd have to really be careful of here is the fact that it is really expensive for the HMO and for the state to have interrupted eligibility and enrollment where people are going off and going on. And when you have, and a lot of times this community engagement will be paired with other personal responsibility and wellness programs, because looking for employment and being engaged productively with the community is really, it fits very much with healthy behaviors. And so, because that's another area of personal responsibility, to become healthier, and becoming healthier typically leads to, you know, other positive results for the individual in their lives. And so when you have a wellness incentive for healthy behaviors, typically you want to have a continuous period of eligibility to look at those individuals and then to administer the rewards or what penalties. There's basically carrots and sticks in a lot of these programs. And when you have interrupted eligibility, then that interferes with your ability to administer these wellness programs. So the HMO is not a disinterested party in all of this. They would, I would think, tend to be biased to keeping people on the rolls so that they could maintain connection with the individuals in terms of these healthy behavior responsibilities, and because they get paid a capitation rate. And when people are off, they tend not to use services, and when they're eligible, they tend to use them. So these interrupted periods of eligibility can really raise havoc with the finances of the HMO, because people are going to tend to use more services in the months they're eligible in an interrupted eligibility situation. And so in some ways, it would be a state-level responsibility to the state would be a more objective party, or I guess not have the same interests as the HMO, maybe even interests that would be counter to what the HMO's motivations are. But let me complicate it a bit also by talking a bit about social determinants. So I think a lot of what's behind this is the recognition that social determinants do impact healthcare, and that includes employment. And I think it's a fair point to make that individuals who are employed, and especially those who are employed full-time, tend to be healthier. Now, what's the chicken and egg here? Is that because individuals who aren't as healthy tend to have trouble holding jobs, and so those that can hold jobs, it would just naturally follow that they're healthier? Or the fact that you have a full-time job, you know, engages you in a way and gives you income that actually promotes health? And I think that's a complicated question. And anyway, so HMOs and Medicaid programs have recognized that social determinants are important, and a lot of the states that have a heavy managed care flavor and history are, some of them at least, in the process of pushing their HMOs to consider social determinants and to engage with the community and to put resources into addressing social determinants through community health workers and various other strategies to try to get at the kinds of support that these individuals and families need to raise themselves up and to be more successful, I guess, or at least successful by some of the standards we're imposing here. So that would speak to, you know, HMOs. It would make some sense to have them be a part of this. But I think it's kind of a plus and minus. And that's really, I think that relates to a lot of this, that the Medicaid population is not monolithic. I mean, when you have 20-25% of the population on Medicaid in the state. That's a lot of individuals in a lot of very, very different situations. And some individuals would be in a state where they really are having difficulty figuring out how to make it in society and can really use a boost and might really benefit from support in terms of social determinants, addressing their social determinants. But then you have a lot of other people that are just in transition. Maybe they moved and they still haven't found a job yet. Who knows what the circumstances are? So you have a whole range of individuals. And when you impose a single design that applies to a lot of folks in the Medicaid program, even if it's a subset of them, typically you're going to provide, I mean, it's going to be helpful in some cases and maybe not so helpful in others.
Yeah. Well, that's some great insight, and we really appreciate your time today, Steve. Thank you very much.
Okay, and actually, I want to throw in one last thing, and that is
sure.
that this to really do this well, state Medicaid programs are going to have to invest more resources in administration just because there's more administrative complexity, there's more to figure out, and there actually are a lot of support services that are necessary to make this work. And so whether it's through the MCOs, the HMOs, or whether it's state staff or, you know, delegated contractual staff, however states might choose to do it, it really does create an additional obligation on the state. And so there would be additional financial resources that would be necessary to support that kind of administration. And it might pay off and reduce medical costs, but I think it would be important for states to go into this with their eyes open, that it really does require an investment.
Yeah, and that might even be a bit tricky with the maintenance of the budget neutrality piece too. But yeah, it sure sounds like something like that would be in need with this type of program. Well, thank you again. Really appreciate it, Steve. Well, that
okay.
concludes our discussion. Oh, great. Thanks, Steve. Well, that concludes our discussion for today. If you have any questions related to this topic or any other healthcare matters, HMA is here to help. Our web address is healthmanagement.com, and we look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today.